survivors on campus beyond these demands, but the school's right on one thing. Change can't wait. That's why we're here today, continuing to find ways to support survivors because we deserve better.
Welcome back to Beyond the Byline, a podcast by The Eagle. A quick content warning before we begin. This episode will discuss sexual assault, which may be unsettling for some listeners. If this is the case, please click off and join us next time. For now, I'm your host, Lydia LaPiccolo. Beyond the Byline focuses on bringing you a deep dive into select stories from the Eagle staff writers. We're in the process of bringing this podcast back to life, so I hope you can join us when our next episode rolls around. For now, enjoy the episode we have for you. This week, I got the chance to sit down with Eagle staff writer Abigail Turner to discuss the recent on-campus walkout story that she collaborated on. So welcome, Abby. I'm so happy you could join me. Now, most students on campus are very aware of the walkout, the movement on campus, and what provoked all of this. But for those that are unfamiliar, could you give them just a little bit of a quick background?
Yeah, so the walkout was sent around the same time as the Leonard incident. And I think a lot of the students we talked to were upset with how the university responded. I think there was a lot of fear, a lot of distrust, and students really just wanted to be assured that they were safe, and they felt that they did not get that from the university's response to the incident. So the walkout was, in general, AU's kind of response to incidents like these, but it was more at this time because of that recent incident.
Yeah. And you guys covered the incident earlier in the semester, a couple weeks ago. With the specific walkout, was that the main focus of the walkout, or were there other aspects that they were looking for? Could you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, so I would say the incident at Leonard Hall was one of the main aspects. The floor on Leonard 8 is all women. So they had freshmen from that floor that came and spoke. It wasn't freshmen directly involved, but they had experienced some of the effects of the incident. So they came and spoke about their experience. And some of the things that they really called for were more protective measures. What they said is, you know, they chose to live on an all-women's floor because they did not want to be around men, but they don't have any additional protections that can protect from, you know, men that can get on the floor. There's no extra security. So what they wanted is additional scan-ins. So when you try to go up the stairs or try to go onto the 8th floor, you do need to have a card that is for Leonard 8. They also wanted lockable shower stall doors, which was something new to me. I did not know that they only had curtains. And so one of the speakers actually talked about how the girls on that floor are showering in pairs because they're just too afraid to go by themselves, and they're bringing scissors with them. So there was this aspect of the Leonard Hall incident, but I think overall it was just this culmination of how AU responds to incidents like these and how students were just fed up.
Yeah. And sorry, really quick, back to the shower doors. Is that abnormal on campus for them to not have shower doors? And is that what we've discovered from this?
From my understanding, Leonard was one of the only halls that doesn't have shower doors, because I know other traditional styles like Letts and Anderson, they have like lockable shower doors, and they also have a curtain on the inside.
You said there were specific speakers at the event. Can you speak directly on any parts of it that really stood out to you and really stood out to you and your writers?
They all had this message of like, you know, we pay AU, we deserve to have a university that can respond to instances of sexual violence in a way that protects students and supports students. A lot of their messages was tailored to that with some more personal experience, but I really think what made the whole event was just how many students came out. You know, whenever a speaker would say something, students would cheer, they would clap. You know, if they said something about the university, they would boo. And so I think that aspect of having hundreds of students out there and you have these speakers on a megaphone, I think that's really what made the instance.
How were students able to spread this message about the walkout? Because I know it was not directly affiliated with any specific organization, but it was student organized.
There were two student advocates, Emily Minster and Lillian Frame. They kind of were behind this. Emily Minster works with It's On Us, which is an AU organization. So it was kind of them along with It's On Us, a couple other students that organized this. But from what I saw was a lot of people sharing Instagram stories. So there had been a post that went around with the details, and a lot of students would repost that. And word spread pretty quickly.
Along with the post spreading the news about the rally, there was also the list of demands attached with that. And so how many, can you speak a little bit on that? And also how many people did end up signing that specific thing? Because I know that that, as of the time that we're recording this currently, it was sent out today,
yes.
I believe.
Which was... I was told it was going to be sent out today. It was going to be sent out to administrators like Sylvia Burwell, Fanta Awe, people in the Office of Equity and Title IX. The first one is to implement a Survivor's Bill of Rights. University of Massachusetts Amherst has something similar, and it just lays out the specific rights that student has. So they know when they come forward with an instance of experiencing sexual violence, they know the rights that they have as a survivor, and it helps them through that process. Another is kind of revamping the sexual assault and sexual harassment training that students and faculty go through. So what the demands called for was an annual, live, and mandatory sexual violence prevention and response training for all employees and all students. And so it would be trauma-informed, survivor-centered, and they want it to be led by peer organizations like It's On Us. So they want the university to contract out with these organizations. And then another was to hire a trauma-informed counselor who is trained in sexual violence and treating PTSD that comes from sexual violence. And then the last is they want Title IX policies to be updated at least once per month on the Title IX website. Through speaking to students about this issue, I found that a lot of them feel very confused about how Title IX spreads information. What the demands call for is like an FAQ page. So students can go, and if they have questions, they can go see them right there, because I've talked to students who've had questions and they've emailed Title IX, and Title IX takes days to get back to them. At that point, like, they need an immediate response because they have a pressing issue at hand.
So we usually get a reaction from the administration via an email from President Burwell of our university. Have there been any other reactions at this time? I know that the list was just sent out as of today, the list of demands. So have we gotten anything else on that end?
Yeah, we have not really heard much from the administration on this, but I know there were two emails sent out. Provost Peter Starr sent one out originally before the walkout, and that was about just like the code of conduct for students and faculty on what they can do and the attendance policy. And then Sylvia sent the email about the working group. And I think a lot of students that I talked to, especially Emily Minster, and then one of our colleagues, Sarah, spoke to Lillian Frame. They had a lot to say about this working group. Often the university has working groups. We hear about them when they're announced, but we don't really hear about the results. And from speaking to them, they had a lot to say about how this might just make things harder to make change. You know, if you want to make change in one of these offices, like the Counseling Center or Office of Equity and Title IX, you're going to have to go through this working group instead of being able to just go directly. And they talked about how this might add a lot of red tape.
Can you just give a quick description of what you mean by red tape and what the organizers mean by red tape?
Yeah, so actually Faith Ferber, who was an AU alum and experienced sexual violence while at AU, she spoke at the event. And when talking about this working group, she said, creating a working group that just adds more red tape to get through, more hoops to launch yourself through, as AU purposely runs down the clock until you graduate. I think where this idea of red tape comes from is the university is not transparent a lot about offices like the Office of Equity and Title IX and the Counseling Center. The Counseling Center could have a week's waiting list for students. And I think that adding this working group on the outside, for what it seems for the organizers, is it's a good idea on the outside, but when you really go break it down on the inside, it's going to be hard for students to reach all of these different offices.
And what has been the general community reaction outside of AU?
Yeah, so actually my friend and other reporter, Kate Corliss, got to speak to a parent who was on a tour. Their son was on a tour and she had two daughters, so her and her two daughters walked around while the other part of the family was on the tour, and she got the chance to interview this parent, and basically she said she was, quote, reluctant to enroll any of her children in this school after hearing the concerns expressed by students. And so I think that speaks to another thing that organizers and speakers said was, you know, this isn't just a change for now. This is going to be a change that impacts students for years and years to come. They don't have to go through the same things and, you know, the same lack of communication, the lack of care that, you know, students today go through when they experience sexual violence.
Mm-hmm. And because this is an ongoing story and we're still waiting for direct responses from the university, because again, the demands were just sent to them. Yeah. But what should our listeners look out for in regards to this story moving forward?
Yeah, so if AU sends us an email about their response to the list of demands, we'll definitely cover those. I know the investigation, from what they're telling us, into the Leonard incident is still ongoing, but when we get more information on that, the Eagle will definitely follow up. And then some fellow reporters and I, we're all doing different articles, but we're all looking into kind of Title IX and how that affects students. Title IX is often marketed at this university as being a place where students can receive care, but Title IX is a gender law. It enforces a law and it works like a court system does. It's innocent until proven guilty. So while students like are told to go here when you need help, it often puts them through a long and lengthy process that does not have care and compassion, from what some students are saying. So we're looking into that as well.
Students who have experienced sexual assault or harassment can seek support through confidential resources such as the University Center for Well-Being Programs and Psychological Services, the Student Health Center, or the hotlines we have linked in this episode's description. Non-confidential resources include the university's Title IX office and AUPD. Thanks again to Abby for coming on the podcast. The full story and video discussed in today's episode can be found at www.theeagleonline.com. Before we go, a couple of Eagle announcements. The Eagle produces a weekly newsletter that will keep you up to date on campus activity, so I highly recommend you sign up. For breaking news and notifications of new releases, follow our Instagram at TheEagleAU and our Twitter at TheEagleOnline. All these things mentioned are linked in the podcast description. Beyond the Byline is produced by myself and Carly Johnson. We will be back soon with another episode, so keep an eye out for that. Until